Kathleen Lauer is a 26-year industry veteran, stylist, and a salon owner of 10 years. Today, we're going to hear all about how she built her business and brand with a focus on customer experiences. Welcome back to the Hairs Are Strong Show. My name is Robert Hughes, and I am your host. And today, I'm with Kathleen Lauer. How are you doing today, Kathleen?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. And
having me.
Absolutely. So anybody that's out there listening or watching this right now, I just wanted to say that we met Kathleen through Instagram, right? I mean,
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Instagram.
We chatted. We had a conversation about apprentices and training. And then my wife and business partner worked with you for a little bit. And then you came to our beauty business brunch last year. Well, this year you're sitting on a panel, and the panel topic is revolutionizing customer experiences and pricing in a new era. We're going to talk about the human, the digital, and the AI aspects of the customer experience. What I thought would be a good idea is to give the audience a chance to get to know you. So I thought maybe talking about your business, how you built it, and all kind of tying into this concept of the customer experience. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome. I'm excited.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we start from the beginning? Did you do an apprenticeship, or did you go to school to get into hair?
I went to school. I went to cosmetology school straight out of high school. But kind of backing up a little bit from that, I started in the industry when I was just 13 years old. And I went from salon to salon, just asking for a job. And finally, a salon owner gave me a chance. And she pretty much wouldn't let me do anything at first, but just take out the trash, clean things up, do some laundry. But eventually a particular stylist there kind of took me under his wing, taught me how to shampoo, how to assist, how to prep for him. And I think that started my love and passion for the industry at a very young age. And all through high school, I worked at different salons as an assistant. And then right from high school, I went into cosmetology school.
All right. And were you working in a salon while you were in school?
I actually was not. I was in school full time. I was in a Paul Mitchell program and went full time just to get in and get out, get it over with. But I was lucky enough, you know, at like 18, 19 years old to still be at home with my parents. So I was able to do so.
Nice, nice. Okay,
yeah.
So you get out of school, and did you already have a salon that you had previously worked at in mind, or did you have to go hunting for a new place to work when you got out of school?
I went and hunted and looked for a new place to work. The stylist that I really worked with through high school was kind of out on his own. It was just him in a small salon setting. So he didn't need my help as much. And he was, you know, kind of tucked back in an office complex, and I needed clients and I needed to get my hands into hair. So I went right into the mall, into Bubbles, at the time. And, you know, there's really no filter in that environment. You just kind of get thrown right in. So right away, just started taking clients.
All right, cool. Okay, so, and then how long did you do that? Like, what was the next move after that? And how long from work starting at Bubbles until the next step?
Well, I think I jumped around a little bit. I think coming right from hair school just into taking clients, I was a bit lost. I was messing up a lot of hair and didn't have any mentorship or community at any of the places that I was working at to really help me understand and grow and actually be able to do good hair. Eventually, I got a job at an Aveda salon and I was there for many, many years. And I think that is when my career took a big turn and a shift. I finally had a community around me of a team of people that cared and was able to help me. And then Aveda offers lots of education, so I was able to get myself educated.
Nice. And so if there's a student listening to this or a recent graduate, what type of advice would you give them? I feel like there's something in that part of your story that you might be able to, you know, share some advice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think assist afterwards. Even before that, I always recommend just working in a salon to start, even before you go to cosmetology school, because that gives you a good picture of what your day-to-day life will be. And then once you get out of school, to find somewhere that you can learn and grow, a community of stylists that are able to help you and want to help you. Because that is really, you know, that extra year that you take or so doing that in the beginning of your career is really going to help you just jump forward your entire career. And you don't have to spend years just kind of lost trying to figure things out and teach yourself.
And how would you, so I remember going into salons and applying. I had no idea if they were good or bad or had training or didn't have training, or they were telling me the truth. They were just straight up lying to me, which unfortunately is a thing. And I, as a matter of fact, I have two young stylists that I'm talking, I guess, I don't know if you'd use the word coaching or mentoring, but I'm there as their sounding board, and the salon owners just straight up lie to them. And then when they get called out, the salon owner goes, "Well, this is just what's good for my business," you know? So how what would you recommend, what would you say to somebody to like help them? Like, is there a way to navigate that? Like, you know, is there like something to look for? Maybe certain types of questions to ask that you might recommend?
I would definitely recommend doing a shadow day, more than one day if you need to, with a salon before accepting a job. Unfortunately, everything that you're describing, I went through as a young stylist, and is definitely, you know, a downside of the industry. So you're going to run into that. And coming in ahead of time and being able to shadow is going to allow you to kind of see the day to day and talk to the other stylists. I do this when hiring, and that allows my team to meet everybody and for them to meet my team. And I have had a few people ask my stylist some pretty tough questions, and even ask questions about me, because they didn't believe whatever I told them in their initial interview, that, you know, what our culture is like or what we offer. And they will actually ask the stylist if it's true and what it's like working here.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of a question that was tough?
One particular stylist that came in, she came from an environment, just a very like catty and drama environment, no education and no support. So I don't think that she believed that we had a happy team-like culture. So she definitely asked a lot of questions about that. And she also asked about just the education support that we give. And that I do help new stylists take different classes. A lot of classes, when you're coming out of school, they're very expensive and you're barely making any money yet. You know, trying to get, you're either getting an assistant salary or you have a few clients a week trying to build. So I do offer different options to help them take some classes and get educated. That I feel is a win-win for the salon and for them, because the more educated the stylist is, the faster I can get clients in their chair and help them grow, and then everybody's happy. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Okay, so shadow, and when you're there shadowing, ask people other than the owner the questions and get some clear answers. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're at Aveda, you find your tribe, you get your education, you get your training. Okay, so, and how long were you at Aveda?
Let's see, it's 5 years.
Okay, 5 years. All right, and so what was the move after Aveda, and like, tell us about that.
Well, as those 5 years were going on, I started taking on more management responsibilities, some more mentoring responsibilities, and just loved it. And I wanted to own my own salon. So that feeling started, coming that I really had a very clear picture of how I wanted the day-to-day things to go, what the culture would be. And I felt like it was my time to do my own thing.
All right. So tell us about that. So did you like 5 years, and then what did you just say? It's like save up your money for those 5 years and open a salon after 5 years, or was there something else that went on before you actually got to the salon?
While you so I started, working on it,
Okay.
thinking about, what is it going to take for me to own a salon? And I knew that I needed a location and I needed money. And those were the two top things that I had to solve. So I was able to get financing for the salon. So once I had that first step, I then needed to let my salon owner know what was happening. So I let her know that I was leaving. And in that culture, if you're leaving, you just go that day. So I left that day and actually started renting from the guy that was training me back when I was in high school, that first salon I worked at. Because now I had some clientele, so I went into his small little tucked away location, and I was able to rent there, and I rented there for about a year as the salon was getting built out and ready to go.
Okay, cool. Look at that, full circle.
Yep, full circle.
Yeah, that's a good reason to keep in touch with people right there. So did the salon owner not take it very well when you said you were leaving? Where was it a shock, or were they kind of like, oh, we saw this coming?
I think it was a shock. The actual owner had another location about an hour away. So her daughter at the time managed. And I think she was hurt by it. Me and her were very close, and that it was just a different culture. And I think they were shocked and hurt. So the reaction was not well. And I knew that going into it. So I was prepared, and that's why I knew I needed somewhere to rent.
So, did you line up the rental before you told them?
I did not.
Oh,
I did
so
not.
do you feel like
But
that was a risky move?
yeah, it definitely was a risky move. The younger me, I even opening the first few years here, I would make, some risky decisions and just hope for the best. I think in ways I felt bad for leaving her salon. We just really had fun and enjoyed each other, every day at work. And there was a friendship there. And I felt like, okay, I had this financing. I know I'm going to do it. And I felt bad keeping it from her. So it just came out. And luckily, I knew that the guy that I worked for previously, I knew that he would probably help me. So the next day, I walked into his salon and was like, can I please come here?
And was that it went from one day to the next, like
Yeah, like
no.
the next week I was set up
Wow.
in his spot, ready to go.
Wow, that's talk about a high pressure situation, huh?
Yeah, high pressure.
Yeah.
And I had a large book, so I had, people waiting for me, and there's a lot of different ends where the pressure was coming from.
Okay, cool. So you're I'm curious, since we kind of preface this thing with this episode with customer experiences, was there something about the customer experience that you wanted to change from where you were? And could you talk a little bit about that, and then talk a little bit about how you made those changes?
So at the time I came from, I think in the industry at that time, a lot of things were not digital. So when a client called into the salon, the reception answers and you're booked, that client is booked with whatever stylist is available. We don't know much about that client. That client doesn't know much about the stylist. And then the client shows up, and over years, I would just see so many errors and problems in that. So I wanted to take the time at the front desk to get to know the client before scheduling them. And that was just very different, you know, from anything that we ever did then. And I had to find ways and systems to create that experience and make a flow for it for the front desk to be able to follow.
So what kind of questions are we talking about that you would ask at the desk to
so
get that
information? We would take, so starting with the stylist, I also realized on the other side of that, that it gave the stylist a lot of anxiety, not knowing who the client was coming in, not knowing anything about their hair. So the client's nervous, you know, it has their own set of, okay, I'm going to a new salon, I'm seeing a new stylist, are they going to be able to do my hair? How much is it going to cost? And then the stylist is meeting that too, wondering a lot of the similar questions. So with the front desk, we would take the time to get to know our stylists, their strengths, their weaknesses, the things that they like to do, the services they don't like to do, and their their timing exactly, everything. We would really spend a lot of time on understanding what the stylist needs. And then based on what they do and what services they do and what services they don't do, then we're able to ask the clients certain questions or now see pictures of those clients and be able to place that client with the best stylist for them. So then I found that my retention rates were just going increasing year after year because of this screening that we were doing ahead of time.
Nice. And this was how early into your opening your business did you do this?
Probably about a year. And I actually laugh at now when I come across like some of the old emails and the templates we would send versus how fast and quick everything is now. But yes, about after a year, we started doing it through email.
Okay. Yeah, so because like now it's like that's some of the most common narratives you hear or advice you hear on social media is getting intake, like how you intake customers. So sounds like you were doing it early on, because I remember we're talking. So that if you've been in business 10 years or been owning your business for 10 years, and it was a year and it was 9 years ago. I mean, I just remember it was like the front desk told you have a client and you have a walk-in or they wouldn't even tell you. You just had to keep in touch with your book. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I think you're like, oh, I can finally take a break. And then you're like, your next client's here, and you're like, what?
Yeah,
I don't have a client.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, you do.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So when you think of, it's like when a customer is coming to the salon, when they're inside of your space, what would you say is your like magic sauce?
So I try to think through every little detail from the time you open up the door till you leave. And to really put myself in my client's shoes. Color services are very pricey now, and they're coming in to spend, a good amount of money with you. And I want to make them feel like they had an experience somewhere that they've never been before, and that they're important. And I think great customer service is extremely important. And huge. So as soon as they're walking in that door, they're getting huge smiles, a welcoming atmosphere. We're helping them get relaxed immediately. And I try to train my staff to make every client feel important and special in their own way. Not that we're just in autopilot and just kind of getting through them, that to take the time to appreciate every client in their own way. And if that's, remembering about their kid's birthday party, the last visit they were in, or the upcoming trip, or, just to really make that a personal experience and for them to feel like we actually care.
Nice. And so,
so I think the smell, essential oils, when you're saying kind of that a sensory thing, because we are a cleaner salon, we do not smell like, ammonia or strong chemicals when you're walking in. You're getting that essential oil smell right when you come in. We have tons of plants and greenery that is supporting our, our mission and our culture. And then we recycle and reuse and all of these just little tips, that little things around the salon as you're going through, that you really see our sustainability on every single part of your appointment.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's the like the key right there is, I know when I go to a place, I completely judge my experience in terms of luxuriousness or high endness, fanciness, based on the tiny little minute details, honestly, you know, you go to a hotel, like a fancy restaurant or hotel, and you go to the bathroom and they have these like these napkin, like paper towels that feel like they're like cotton, but you know what I'm talking about?
We have those.
Yo, yeah.
Yes.
Like that's what I'm talking about. Like,
yes.
Like, and then like the soap dispenser isn't not all these things have that, but like I can't think of a brand name, but like some like brand name you buy like CVS, or you could just dump it into a different, you know, dispenser that looks like
make
more
it feel,
spec. Yeah, exactly. Or candles, like you could have, like, you know, you go to TJ Maxx and you have all these like varying types of candles that look kind of eclectic and stuff, and it's not very expensive, but like you could also buy like the Hallmark brand candle, you know, and then that would be, I don't know, that those kind of little things, I feel like it really kind of impacts me personally, like my personal experience, the weight of the doors, how the doors lock behind me in the bathroom. I guess I'm very like much a bathroom person. It's
Everything
like,
you mentioned is about the
yeah, because
bathroom.
it's got to be clean and little tiny details in the inside of there.
Yes. And I think clean, that's a huge part.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how much a client notices when they're sitting there for a few hours.
Totally. Just sitting around, looking around. Yeah, they're looking at their phone, but they're constantly like looking up, and when their eyes drift around and they see everything.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, this is great. So when, you know, as we kind of get in, we've gotten into your business, and I would like you to share us any sort of story of what salon ownership is like. If you want to tell us about, you know, some highs, if you want to tell us about some lows, and, you know, how you got through those lows, as we kind of like come up to current day where we are, and kind of tie up your story with like getting through those 10 years. You know, throughout those 10 years, you're constantly thinking about the customer's experience. I guess before you go into highs or lows, I'd be curious to know if there's in that, have you seen changes of the last couple of years in customer expectations?
Absolutely.
And customer and employee expectations.
Yes, both. It is something that I've spent really heavily, like the past 2 years, really trying to navigate. I think on the client end, they are, as an industry, I think our industry took a shift. And our services got longer and more detailed, and our prices increased, and the industry grew, but the client side of it, they didn't fully understand or grasp what was happening. So now that we're in it, giving them that experience that they think is valuable of now what our prices are, and what they are expecting of their service. And I think before, you know, it was okay, just a very fast service coming in, getting your hair cut, in and out. And that's no longer the case. Clients want to feel an experience when they come in. And kind of as we were talking about, they want to feel important. They want to feel like they have your attention. And that is just different, I think, from kind of where maybe me and you came from, of just this fast-paced kind of in and out services and just day-to-day salon life. So navigating that and understanding that and slowing down and taking the time to understand what they need. I think as far as even booking and just communicating with them to get them into the salon, that on the other end, that has become a very quick, fast thing that a lot of times I find clients don't even want to talk to us anymore. And most of it's going through text message or email exchanges. But I find even the emails are getting too long now, and it needs to be faster in text messages or open to them to do on their own. So that, you know, is really changing. And I think the push of that is the stylist wanting a different work and life balance. They don't want to work at that fast pace anymore of taking, you know, 15 clients a day. And they don't want to work open to close anymore. And we want to charge more for our services. So I think us feeling that way is fueling that as well.
So do you think that stylists wanting to essentially work less hours and less, well, you didn't say days, but less hours, and so wanting to work less and charge more, you know, like if you take away the amount of customers and the amount of time and you increase the prices, like it, are you seeing things kept on par? Are you seeing people being able to make more money doing that, or are they making about the same amount of money? They're just working less.
I think about the same, but working less.
Okay.
I think, or the other end. I see kind of all sides of it, and it's honestly something that I'm navigating and have not fully figured out. Because I really have felt the shift in the last couple of years. I think stylists, they realize that, okay, I can only get in X amount of clients with these hours, with these shifts. So then they're kind of capped out at a certain amount of money. So I've had stylists, once they reach that point, then they want to start booking tighter and faster and, you know, kind of get balancing that out so that they can still work the same amount of time, but now they want more of that. But then I've had some stylists stay in that and they're completely fine in that, and they're not really have the desire to increase anymore.
Sounds like, I mean, it sounds a little like reverting back to the mean, like we go in this one direction where we like reduce our hours and we spend more time with our customers until the reality of the money hits us, and then we start figuring out how to redo the work in less time to be able to take more hours, maybe take a few more clients. And but like, so what changes do you think are going to stick around, you know, if that is the case, if, you know, if things are going to the point where people are going to eventually like work more or make less money. I mean, do you think that there's a cap to the amount of money? Like, can we just keep raising our prices? I mean, how
No.
dangerous is, or safe is that?
I don't think it's safe. Because when you just keep raising your prices, and it becomes a luxury experience and such a luxury pricing, the average person can't afford to sustain that. So what is happening, instead of seeing a client every 4 to 8 weeks, now these lived-in colors that are costing, you know, $500, you're only seeing once a year, or maybe twice a year if you're lucky. So you need a lot of clients if that's your return rate. You need a lot of clients. And I don't think that that's sustainable. And I find that those stylists tend to have more gaps in their day and not be as busy, and it's shifting. And the clients, there's only so much they're going to value that hair service. And that's just the reality of it. And the public doesn't value it as much as we're saying that it needs to be valued, and as much as we're saying that it should cost, the public isn't they're not there yet. Your clients aren't there yet. So they're just not getting their hair done. And you see a lot right now that the industry's slow, stylists are slow. And I do think the pricing has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's like, you know, there's so many coaches and influencers telling hairdressers that they can do it too. But the reality is that, you know, it's an unfortunate reality. Math, you know, it's like, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to kind of like fight mathematics and statistics, and, you know, like demographics are what they are. You know, you got X amount of people who live in your area, your total addressable market, those who you can service, and those who, you know, and then what is the SAM, the serviceable, whatever they are, you know, like the grouping, how you can identify who could come. Now, of course, the argument, I just had a discussion with a stylist who was saying, well, if you're good, they'll come to you. And I was like, I
not
don't
now.
I
No.
mean, bye.
At the end of the day, it comes down to money, and that's business, stylist, client at the end of the day. And I mean, if you're looking in your average, if your surroundings, your community, and the average income's like $80,000 a year, well, think about how much can that person sustain every month. And it doesn't matter if you're good or not. If they can't afford you, they're just going to go to the best person that they can afford in that bracket.
Right. And then a person who's spending money on a luxury service, if they are in a demographic that can afford to sustain luxury services, that's one thing. But
that's one thing. Yeah.
If they're reaching for this service and they're saying, you know what, I'll just get my hair done a little less because like I like this luxurious service. Well, you're going to be more prone to economic shocks. You know, as we know, the business is cyclical, the economy is cyclical, which might be a good kind of segue into kind of wrapping the conversation up with you, sharing how, you know, what type of things you've had to navigate with you as a business owner. So you've been navigating these changes in expectations. And then what about like over 10 years? Have you had different periods of highs and lows in terms of the business, or the, you know, relative to the economy, or, you know, was it unique to your own business that you had to overcome? Is there anything in that space that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think a little of all of those you experience as a business owner. You know, you strive to open a salon, you go through the whole build out process. It's so fun. You get it open. And then once it's open, it's like, okay, well, now my rent's due in 30 days and I got bills to pay. And the reality starts sitting in that you got to figure it out. So there is definitely a lot of highs and lows. And there are times where, you know, the salon just didn't make enough money and I have to have faith and you have to drive through that. I remember the first year being open, like writing my rent check and being like, please let me be busy enough this weekend to fully cover it because I'm like $500 short, you know, and that's the reality of being a salon owner. So it's not for the faint of the heart, that's for sure. You have to have a lot of passion to get through that. But then on the upsides, there's times where, you know, I was just growing, growing, growing that I couldn't even believe what my numbers were, that those were my hopes and goals when I first opened. Or I'm seeing stylists that were assisting with me and now they're booked out for 6 weeks in advance and, you know, they're making good money and everybody's happy. And so there's so many ups and downs. And I don't think it's how many years you own a salon. I think it's always up and down. And that's the reality of ownership, just business ownership in general.
So do you think that navigating highs and lows, and especially in consideration of customer expectations and stylist expectations, you know, if there's like a salon owner out there or even a stylist, you know, if people are going for, if stylists are raising their prices, then What type of impact has that had in the dynamic between the relationship between you and your stylists? Like, has that created tension at all because of these changes? Has it created any tension? And if it has, how have you navigated? And if it hasn't, then I have another question.
Yes, it has. I have felt lots of pressure from certain stylists to increase prices to, X amount of money or to enforce certain policies. And there have been moments where I will have a client on one end and then the stylist on the other end, and the stylist wants me to enforce a certain policy that I know is not giving the best customer service, and that I know deep down in my gut it's not the right thing to do, but the stylist wants it. And if I don't give it to the stylist, then the stylist has tension with me and the salon. And I think as a salon owner, we're in a way you're dependent on your stylist. That's what keeps your, doors flowing, the money flowing, the clients coming. So at times I felt like if I don't enforce this policy, am I eventually going to lose this stylist and then lose her book and then the salon be in a situation? And that's hard.
And are we talking policy like a cancellation policy,
Like
as an
cancellation
example?
policies.
So, do you think that, I mean, cancellation policies, that's another really widespread conversation on social media. How do you feel about cancellation policies?
I've had a huge kind of shift in it. I knew at times being in that position with that cancellation policy, there were a few times where I picked what the stylist wanted over what was best for my client because of it happening a few times. And if I would have kept favoring in the client, I was going to lose the stylist. And I was fearful of losing the stylist. And so I made that decision and it was a mistake. So after, doing that a few times, then I spent months trying to clean myself up from that. And even putting my pride aside and going back to that client that was with me for years and saying, "Hey, this wasn't right. I feel like I didn't give you the best call. How can I make it up to you?" And even though it might have happened 6 months ago, but that client was with me for years, so let me reach back out and try to make it. I tried to make it right. So now, how I feel about them, I think they're good. At times, there are times where we need that protection. And there's times where client, that 5 hour color correction, or that whole day color correction just took up your whole day and they canceled an hour before. There's times where they become really useful, or somebody that's just always kind of taking advantage of their appointments. But I think that's a very small percentage. And I mean, I really think like 5% of the clientele actually needs that policy. I think all of the other times we need to be more understanding. Because 9 times out of 10, that client's just going to book the next week or your next opening, and they want to come back to you. So it's worth working with the client and getting them rescheduled.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. Like, if they're a chronic abuser of my schedule, then I don't want that client anyway. But
Right, exactly.
at the same time, like, my first thought now is it took many years to get to this point, but my first thought is I hope that they weren't in a car accident, or like the no show, no call, or the cancellation with no explanation. I hope that they didn't just find out someone's deathly ill and they have to go see them, or like, you don't know what that person's going through.
And I would also get the response when I was going into cancellation policy with clients. I would have a few clients say to me, "Well, she was sick and she canceled on me." And it's kind of, what do you say to that? Because it is a relationship. And there's going to be times where you're sick or you're late or your kid needs this or that or whatever the situation is, and you're going to have to cancel. So there needs to be more focus on building good relationships with your clients. And that's what helps you maintain and build a clientele And I think in with all the social media, you know, it's very easy for a client to be like, oh, that's the next new great hairstylist in my area. Look at all these beautiful pictures and videos. And if you don't build that relationship and that communication with your client, then what is stopping them from just going somewhere else?
Yeah, totally. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing all this. You know, this has been great. So what are you excited about for kind of looking forward at right now? Like in terms of anything that we talked about today, or maybe something we didn't talk about in terms of your business or the industry?
Well, let's see. For the business side of it, I'm looking forward. I am right now in the process of making my booking systems even easier and even faster. So I was kind of working on that all day today, and I'm excited for those new things, and I'm hoping that it helps us push some new clients into the salon. And I think within the salon, I have a lot of new team members right now. The salon went through a big shift in January. And I have, let's see, four new stylists or rising stylists. So I'm excited to help them grow and help them learn and help them build a clientele. So that's been fun.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking
thank
the time
you.
To come on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I look forward to having you on the panel on May 19th. So everybody listening and watching, we will hopefully we'll see you at the Beauty Business Brunch on May 19th. And you can click on, you will have a link in the description below if you're listening on podcast or YouTube. And for everybody else on social media, you can check out the link in our bio. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. I'll
Thank
be
you.
talking to you soon. You're welcome.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.